From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Outer Mission.
I live in the Nastro.
I live in the Mistro.
La Playa.
I live in the Transmission.
Haight Ashbury.
I'm in the sunny but filthy Mission.
Coming up, we hear about a reintroduced bill that hopes to change the way juveniles are sentenced.
They have a long fight ahead of them if they hope to get the governor to pass this bill.
Then we'll hear the tunes of the famous Golden Gate Park Band.
Over here you can just throw the ball around and play football, so it's just a good time to be outside and listen to great music.
And we'll meet a San Francisco writer raising awareness for a misunderstood disorder.
Basically, I contacted all of the support groups across the country and found out that people would be interested in sharing their stories.
We're sharing your stories, all that today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. New legislation has reached the governor's desk that would change the way juveniles are sentenced. Senate Bill SB9, introduced by State Senator Leland Yee of San Francisco, would allow people who are serving life without parole for crimes they committed when they were juveniles to ask for sentences of 25 years to life instead.
When I started to really look into this issue about 5 years ago, there were handfuls of country in the world that still had this particular sentence. Now, 5 years later, the United States is the only country in the world that has this sentence, that if you commit a horrible crime when you are underage, you will be sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. This is barbaric, and what I would really like to do is just ban it. But the reality in politics is that you have got to look for compromises. And so the bill that we have now basically says that, you know, if in fact you have this particular sentence, you have to serve that sentence for 15 years, at which time you have to demonstrate to the court that, number one, you have been rehabilitated. Number two, you've gotten your GED. You've demonstrated remorse, accepted responsibility, really turn your life around. So you've got a high hurdle to pass. Then your sentence will be changed from life without the possibility of parole to 25 years to life. If you make the initial petition and you're disqualified and they don't agree with you that you ought to be given a second chance, you then only have two more chances. And then if you're denied, then you are, in fact, going to be sentenced to die in prison. And so hopefully this will give kids a second chance. I've always said that our society is defined by how we treat our children. And for us to just simply throw away the key for our kids is something that I just cannot imagine.
This is Yee's third attempt at reforming life without parole, also known as LWOP. The bill failed by just 5 votes last year. Now that it's on the governor's desk, the question is, what will become of it this time around? Joining me to discuss the possibilities is KALW criminal justice reporter Nancy Mullane.
The governor can refuse to sign this bill, and they don't have the votes to override a governor veto. So It really is dependent on Governor Brown signing it into law. At this point, Leland Yee says that the Governor Brown's staff in background conversations, that they actually were getting some positive responses from the governor's staff. But now they've heard another rumor that Governor Brown is maybe not completely on board with signing this into law. One of the problems that the governor's facing is that there is a significant amount of opposition to this bill being signed by the sheriffs in the state, the police chiefs, patrolmen, the District Attorneys Association for the state of California. They are all opposed to this, including the Crime Victims United. And they have made it clear that they are going to make a huge push, putting out an alert to motivate their supporters to fight against this bill.
And this is despite the fact that this new version of the bill has an exemption. It exempts offenders convicted of torture or killing law enforcement officials. So that wasn't enough for the law enforcement community?
Apparently not. You know, one of the things that I just find really interesting, that as we look at this bill over the years, more and more data and information comes out that African-American youth are sentenced to LWOP at a rate 18 times that of white youth in the state, and, you know, up to 5 times that of Hispanic youth in the state. So, you know, one of the concerns is that, you know, dependent on where your crime was convicted and what court you go before, the chances of you getting juvenile LWOP increase with the geography or the area in which you have committed your crime. So I think there's, you know, as Lila Nee's chief of staff said, they are definitely not out of the woods on this bill yet. They have a long a fight ahead of them if they hope to get the governor to pass this bill.
That's KALW criminal justice reporter Nancy Mullane, author of Life After Murder, 5 Men in Search of Redemption. A photo exhibit featuring her book and its subject is now showing on Alcatraz Island in the main cell house dining hall. All the details are at KALW.org. And we also want to hear what you think about juvenile sentencing. Should they be sentenced to life without parole? Leave a message on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Alcatraz Island is a San Francisco landmark. And although the city of San Francisco has been around since the mid-1800s, many of its civic institutions, the things that make the city, have only been around since after the 1906 earthquake, just over 100 years. At least 2 older city icons survived the quake. One is the cable car, invented in 1873. And the other is the Golden Gate Park Band. The band enlivens the Spreckles Temple of Music on Sundays from late April until early October, just as it has every year since it was formed in 1882. KALW's Stephen Short went strolling in the park recently, and here's some of what he heard.
If you stand between the DeYoung Museum and the California Academy of Sciences in Golden Gate Park, you'll see an impressive amphitheater called the Spreckles Temple of Music. It's a typically cool Sunday afternoon, and 150 or so people are sitting on wooden benches as the Golden Gate Park Band warms up in the band shell. The musicians are all wearing red hats and red jackets. Someone in a bright blue jacket addresses the audience as the clock strikes one. Director Michael L. Wirkler.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to our concert today. We have a wonderful concert planned for you, so sit back and enjoy.
Community bands have always been part of American life, being most popular in the 19th century. Some started as military bands, and that's true of this one. It was formed to support San Francisco's unit of the California National Guard back in 1882. But band director Wirkler says the Golden Gate Park Band has a distinction that makes it different from many of the others.
We are a professional band. We actually have a contract with the union.
It seems like it's a very stable band. Do you have much turnover?
Not much at all. People usually stick with it. And in a lot of ways, we're like the, what do they call it, Freeway Philharmonic. You know, this gives some people a little bit of their salary, and then they go and play in that orchestra over there and get a little more, and that's how they survive.
Audiences can expect a variety of styles from the band: symphonic, ballet, swing band music, and of course, marches. None of those styles, however, show up on Guy Bellingrath's list of favorites. He likes
jazz, rock, sometimes classical.
But this 8-year-old has another reason for enjoying this outing.
Yes, it's just a good time to get outside. Over here, you can just throw the ball around and play football. So it's just a good time to be outside and listen to great music.
Guy's mother, Marisa Bellingrath, like other parents here today, also appreciates the ability to come and go as you please.
We can come in and out of our seats and hear amazing music and enjoy the park.
I've never seen an outdoor concert that had a football intermission before.
Well, for us, it's what makes this concert work.
The band shell is only a short walk from home for Jennifer Jung. She and a friend have six children with them today, all under 9 years old. But really, do kids this young even notice the music?
They do. They like it. One was dancing, and then the other was, like, you know, clapping his hands to the beat. It was good.
I think it's good for the families.
Kit Kwan also lives nearby. He hadn't planned to come to the performance. He was just out for a walk.
It's actually the music's kind of attract us to stop by. Usually, otherwise, we just go across and go to the Science Museum and then go all the way around the park. It's a great event, and hopefully they can continue.
Performances have always been free, and director Wergler says the band needs help to keep it that way.
We get some funds from Grant for the Arts, which is, you know, comes from the hotel tax fund.
Their support group, the Friends of the Golden Gate Park Band, also helps. And there's another small but cherished income source, which is mentioned before each performance.
There's also our wonderful historic yellow jar. Its purpose is to collect donations. The donations come back to the band so that we can continue with our program of free concerts out here in the park.
But if you don't have extra cash, clarinetist Jofria Whitfield suggests another way you can contribute.
Our previous concert, we played Stars and Stripes Forever for our grand finale, and people were screaming like a rock concert. It was amazing. We just stood there, and I actually got a little teary-eyed just because it was just such a wonderful response. Musicians love that kind of thing. I don't know if people really realize that, but it takes a lot of arduous and long work to learn to play an instrument well. And when people respond in a way that lets you know that they really appreciate it, it really makes our day.
There are few genuinely free community events in the city anymore. So the Golden Gate Park Band is one that really deserves a hand. In both senses of the word. In Golden Gate Park, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
The Golden Gate Park Band season continues until October 7th. You can see the themes of each week's performance at their website, which you'll find at our website, kalw.org, and click on News. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. San Francisco is proud of its traditions and of its architecture, which might be why when you want to build something in San Francisco or change its use, there's a lot of red tape. The approval process is meant to protect residents and to ensure they get a say in what goes on in their neighborhood. In San Francisco's Outer Sunset District, there's been a decades-long debate over a building called the Beach Motel between 47th and 48th on Judah Street. On the surface, this is a zoning dispute. Is the 20-unit beach motel supposed to house tourists or permanent residents? But at its core, this is a case about the character of a neighborhood, and it's up for another hearing tomorrow night. From our archives, KALW's Ben Trefney brings us this story and what it means.
The neighborhood at the edge of the earth, where streetcars turn away from the wind, was once a dangerous place.
You'd be afraid to walk out on the streets in fear of getting mugged or getting shot at.
Vijay Patel is 42 years old. He works for eBay now and lives south of San Jose in Morgan Hill. But when he was 14, he and his family had just moved from the outskirts of London to San Francisco's West End.
Growing up in the Sunset, especially in the Judah, was difficult. There was a huge homeless population, and there was very little policing of the area at the time. So I wouldn't say we were in constant fear, but we were guarded of, do I want to walk two blocks up, or do I want to walk a block down to the beach without getting assaulted?
That was then. This is now. The community's gone through a transformation in the past 10 years. It's turned weed-strewn lots into rock gardens. It's added a neighborhood watch, and it's installed at least a dozen small businesses. The neighborhood has changed a lot since Patel's father bought the 20-unit beach motel back in 1983.
It's a good neighborhood. Everybody is peace and quiet.
Bob Patel and his wife live at the motel, which looks pretty much like any of the other flat-fronted three-story apartment buildings framing Judah Street. It's a good business, he says. Draws about $300,000 in revenues in a good year. And he says he's a good neighbor to his fellow business owners.
They don't want any bum people or that, something like that. And that's why we are trying to do is that we want to save this property as a tourist motel.
The problem is...
The Beach Motel is a motel that operates illegally as a tourist hotel under the zoning.
Steve Collier says the Beach Motel is supposed to be a residential hotel. He works with the Tenderloin Housing Clinic, a nonprofit that, like Bob Patel, has been working in San Francisco about 30 years. But where Patel works with tourists, the THC leases units long-term, nearly 1,600 in 16 hotels in an apartment building, all for low-income tenants. They've got on-site case managers, support services, and a legal team that includes Collier.
Whenever residential hotel rooms are converted to non-residential use, it results in a direct loss of housing for low-income people.
And he says that's what the Beach Motel has been doing for decades.
The city has on its records that it was 100% residential in 1979.
In the years that followed, those numbers shifted. Sometimes there were more permanent residents, and sometimes there were more tourists. Eventually, the Beach Motel turned exclusively to the more lucrative tourist trade. Collier says that never should have happened.
I could tear down my home in a residential neighborhood and build a six-story apartment building. If I could get the financing, I'd make a lot more money. But it's not legal.
But the law is not that clear-cut. In fact, there's a certificate right above the Beach Motel's front desk that says the building can legally rent to tourists. The City Department of Building Inspection issued that in 2002. But that was 5 years after the City Board of Appeals found that the Beach Motel was in violation of local codes. Those conflicting rulings were never reconciled, and the THC and Bob Patel have been fighting it out in court for 16 years and counting, debating the merits of res judicata and non-conforming conversion allowances without resolution or any more clarity. Patel and his legal team ratcheted up their own rhetoric, spreading 2,000 flyers around the neighborhood that said, quote, "The Tenderloin Housing Clinic is trying to force the owner of the Beach Motel to run the motel as a group home housing welfare recipients or felons."
That's just bias. That's not fact. That's just someone's bias,
says Collier. And Patel?
Well, that's completely, absolutely right. And lots of the neighborhood think this is a right.
Would it be felons who would be living here?
I don't know.
But this flyer says it would be.
Well, they're trying to put the, halfway house or something like that.
Some type of housing for felons. It's certainly a possible use of group housing. It's not out of the reach of possibility.
Attorney Andrew Zaks represents Bob Patel.
And the real question is, what does the Tenderloin Housing Clinic propose to do if, in fact, the city were, in the unlikely event the city were to rule in the favor, what would the land use be? Nobody really knows what that use will be.
The THC claims to have no interest in taking over the Beach Motel, but it has filed lawsuits against half a dozen business owners alleging they're conducting illegal tourist operations. And the city's zoning laws have supported Collier's claims before.
Well, the Empress Hotel illegally converted to tourist use, and that violated the zoning and eventually was closed and then reopened now as a residential hotel.
The Empress Hotel is about two blocks from Bloomingdale's, the Westfield Shopping Mall, but it could be a world away. This is typical Tenderloin. It's across the street from the Tea Room, all-male adult entertainment, and it's also two blocks from the Tenderloin Police Department. It's an equal housing opportunity hotel. It's pretty clean and nice from the outside, and it's in a neighborhood that has a mixture of tourist hotels, such as the Royal Inn, and residential hotels like the Hotel Ambassador.
On a weekday morning, a couple of residents stand outside the hotel on Eddy Street. Robert Miller says he pays a third of his income to live here.
So if you get like $1,000, it's like $300.
Is it safe?
It's very safe. They got cameras on every floor.
How long have you lived here for?
About 7 years.
Jackie Zeltzman has lived at the Empress for 12 years. She says she was one of the managers when it housed both residents and tourists.
I can't say that it was nicer. It was just different. They catered to people differently than they do with the people here. But these people here have medical and mental needs that need to be met. So there's a lot of medical and social worker staff here.
How much do you pay a month to stay here?
I pay almost $1,000 rent.
Per month?
Per month.
That doesn't sound that inexpensive.
I'm not on subsidized housing here. The ones of us that decided to stay still have to pay the full rent.
So what do you think about living in a place that has some subsidized housing and some that's not?
I think it's okay. I think it's all right. It works. Yeah, it works.
Vijay Patel stands in the parking lot of the Beach Motel. He's thinking about how the neighborhood came together over the last many years, creating parks, building businesses.
It increases our property values. It increases safety for our kids, you know. The level of, and people coming out here, it makes apartment buildings more attractive. It's safer to live in the Sunset. We can even make it even more solid, you know. The last thing we want is to have something coming in and changing all that.
In San Francisco, I'm Ben Trefney for Cross Currents.
San Francisco's Board of Appeals will rehear the Beach Motel case tomorrow night at 5 p.m. in City Hall. You can find all the information you need, as well as any updates, online at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Not too far from the Beach Motel, at 39th Avenue and Ortega Street, you'll find the Ortega branch of the San Francisco Public Library. That's where our Hear Here producers met Xiao Juanxu.
I thought that was my American dream, you know, work for a big company and start making more money and help my family in China. But something's missing, I don't feel fulfilled. Something's missing. I couldn't figure out what was that. Every night when I came to my apartment, I feel so tired. And then I will miss my mother's, you know, the fish soup I used to hate so much.
The Hear Here Project has been visiting libraries and community organizations all around San Francisco and Oakland, bringing back the stories of the people who live there. At the San Francisco Main Library, they discovered Chris Mason. Mason came to the library to share his story of coping with a life-altering nervous system disorder.
My name is Chris Mason. I live in the North Beach area of San Francisco. Now I'm a writer. I have a lot of other things too, but that's my main goal and like what I spend my free time doing right now. I've had two books published. Like the first book, the anthology, is about like people that have Tourette's syndrome, which I have, and I thought that like by telling our stories, we could raise awareness for the disorder. When I was 6 years old, I first started having symptoms of Tourette's syndrome when my mom was in the hospital being treated for Hodgkin's disease. I started off with an eye twitch. My mom brought me to the doctor when she got better, but I wasn't actually diagnosed until age 20. I kind of thought with everybody, like the rest of my family, that my problems were over because there were medications to treat it, but they didn't like take into consideration this little white pill that made my life horrible. Basically, I feel like I have a hangover 24 hours, 7 days a week. I can sleep at the drop of a hat. Sometimes I sleep for 18 hours a day. I'm not alert as I used to be before I started taking the medication. I know I've been discriminated against many times against jobs. Many people have discriminated against me with jobs. Relationships have been very difficult when people have found out that I have Tourette's. It's like, and find out it's hereditary, then they just, like if I ever were to have kids, they would almost be guaranteed to have it. I just don't even want to think about, like if I barely survived it myself, I don't want to think about what might happen if I have a kid and they like blamed it on me or got it and had it worse than me. For a long time, I didn't want to talk to anybody about it, but I think it's really important, like I said before, to raise awareness for the disorder.
Chris Mason shared that story with Hear Hear producer Audrey Dilling. Find links to where you can buy his book on our website at KALW.org. And you can find our Hear Hear producers at their next pop-up recording. It's at the 81st Avenue Library in East Oakland this Saturday from 12 to 4 p.m. Stop by and share your story. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Zoe Bresny, Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, RTM's Conahovs, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Moo, Mary Reese, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Seth Samuel's not here, but we miss him.
Wait, we do?
Booyah! Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Booyah!
Boom.
Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. The song you're hearing now is performed by Mokai. He shares his unique finger-picking guitar style and socially conscious lyrics throughout the Bay and Northern California, and he's appearing tomorrow at the Lost Church in San Francisco starting at 7:30 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
You take your place.